This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 3rd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home office in New York. And Taylor, I got to say, this morning I read the greatest tweet ever. The greatest. The best tweet I've ever seen.
There's a lot of bad tweets out there. So the fact that you've pulled the greatest, let's hear what it was.
Okay, Nick Gomez. This was in response to an article I wrote yesterday about the Cubs and how I felt like it was time to break up this group. It was time for them to all move on. Nick Gomez, at NickyG821, tweeted at me, "Terrible article, and I haven't even read it." All players needed was an owner that didn't screw everything up. Thanks. I love that. Terrible article, and I haven't even read it. Does that encapsulate social media or what?
Oh, yeah. I appreciate his honesty. Honestly, yeah. like people will just say terrible article and not read it, but not own up to the fact that they hadn't actually read it. So good on
and
this person.
Polite. How yeah. about at the back end? Terrible article, and I haven't even read it. Thanks.
What a way to start the day. That's hilarious.
I love it. Seriously. Like that to me is the greatest tweet ever. It was awesome and made me laugh this morning. And I appreciate that. It's remarkable how the Yankees' efforts to build momentum continually hit speed bumps. They go into Miami over the weekend, have a great weekend series against the Marlins. And then Monday, they returned home to Yankee Stadium amid a lot of excitement. The bleacher creatures were out. Roll calls for Anthony Rizzo, for Joey Gallo. They're playing the Tankathon Orioles, and they immediately got whacked. Cedric Mullins, top of third inning.
And that's hit in the air to deep right field, way back there, and that baby's gone. A home run for Cedric Mullins, and it's 1-0 Baltimore.
105.7 The Fan. The Orioles weren't done.
The 1-1, and that's in the air to deep left field. Back is Gallo, running out of room, and he will leap, and it's gone. And the Orioles go back-to-back. 2-0 Baltimore.
Yeah, quickly, Andrew Heaney was down 4-0 on 4 solo homers, which meant that the highlight of the game actually took place in the 8th inning when a cat ran on the field.
Uh-oh. Well, this could be a while.
Michael, go down there and catch that cat, would you?
Well, if that person would open the door there, he might... The little cat might go through looking for some way. Now, we usually don't show when somebody gets loose on the field, but this time we're making an exception.
Yeah, Michael Kay and Paul O'Neill on the Yes Network. It went on for 4 minutes, Taylor. 4 minutes. Where and you know what? I respect the fact that the groundskeepers were giving the cat its space and finally got a door open where the cat could run off the field.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, it looked like the Yankees trying to chase their playoff chances.
Oh, listen to you, Badu.
Oh, with the elbow.
Checking in. Now, the bad news for the Yankees didn't stop at the end of this game. Right after the game, here is Aaron Boone talking about Yankees ace Garrett Cole.
Garrett will not be pitching tomorrow. He's actually tested positive for COVID. So he will not be pitching tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking with Sarah Langs about that, about the Yankees and their inability to gather momentum, and about the cat in just a little bit. Earlier in the day, a great game between the Indians and Jays. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. came to the plate in the bottom of the sixth.
The 1-0. Swing and a drive out to deep left field. It's an absolute rocket, and it is gone! An absolute no-doubter. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. ties this game with an explosive swing.
That from Sportsnet 590, the Fan. Yeah, he hit it out like 115 miles an hour. But the Indians would find a way to win.
Now the pitch, and it's swung on. This is belted deep left field. If it's fair, forget it. It is gone off the foul screen. And the Indians get a two-run homer down the left field line by Jose Ramirez. And a three-run outburst in the 10th against former Indian Brad Hand. And the Indians have a 5-2 lead.
That was in the 10th inning. Tom Hamilton, WTAM 1100, and that would be the final score. While we focused a lot on the Blue Jays, the Yankees, Oakland in the wild card race, the Mariners just keep on winning games, and they faced the Rays on Monday and won again.
Swung on and blasted to left field. This is crushed. How far is this going to go? Way back near the aisleway in left center field. Ty France just destroyed a ball, demolished it. A solo home run, his 11th, his third hit of the ball game, and the Mariners add to the lead, 7-2, as Ty France goes yard in a big, big way.
That from 710 ESPN Seattle. Final score there was 8-2. The Mets leading the National League East, being chased by the Phillies. The Braves faced the Marlins, and boy, they took a big hit in the bottom of the first.
Brinson hammers one right field, going back. Drury still going back, looking up. Out of here! A grand slam for Lewis Brinson. It's his fourth home run of the season. And the Marlins have a 4-0 lead in the first.
From 940 WINZ on the way to the Marlins, 6-3 win. The Phillies face the Nationals, and they took the lead in the top of the ninth.
Three balls, two strikes. Here's the payoff pitch. Swing and a line drive into left field. There's a base hit down the line. Jankowski will score. Here comes Segura, and it's a two-run single for JT Realmuto, and the Phillies are back on top. It's 5-3.
That was Scott Fransky, 94 WIP. Phillies win 7-5. The Angels recalled hot-hitting outfield prospect Joe Adell from AAA Salt Lake. The Giants and the Diamondbacks, and they were tied till Buster Posey came through.
Swing and Buster rips one down the left field line. Fair ball. It rolls into the left field corner. Coming around third, Crawford, he'll score it. Heading for second is Posey with a stand-up double. And the Giants are back ahead 9-8.
And they would win 11-8. That was the great John Miller on the Giants radio network.
All right, Buster, before we move on here, I wanted to mention that Team USA Baseball, they lost to Japan in the quarterfinals. We gotta mention Team USA Baseball. There is still a path to a gold medal game. They are in the mix to get at least a bronze, which is nice. Gotta mention our friends Jason Benetti and Eduardo Perez calling a terrific game yesterday morning. We recorded bright and early, so I had the game on. They were very entertaining to listen to. Not surprising. Eduardo was singing at one point about the batter, you know, not thinking about a runner on first base and keeping the ball down. So that was a thing. But they had a 6-3 lead in the fifth after a 3-run shot from number one Red Sox prospect Tristan Casas. But they slowly bled that away, including Japan tying the game in the bottom of the ninth. They used 4 of 7 relievers that they have on the roster, and relievers like Brandon Dixon, Edwin Jackson were trotted out. So Japan wins, bottom 10, walk it off. Team USA plays the Dominican Republic tonight at 11 p.m. That's August 2nd when we're recording. But Dominican Republic beat Israel last night, 7-6 in 10 innings. So should I stay up and watch this game? We're recording a little bit on the early side tomorrow, but I feel like I haven't watched a ton of these games live, you know, because of the time change and everything. But it could be a dicey situation. That game could go till almost 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I think absolutely you should watch it and report back to me, because I will be asleep for some of it.
So asleep.
And also, the one piece of advice I give you before you watch it, do not come close to the, you know, meeting your over under 22.5 drinks.
Okay. Yeah, there'll be none of that. So I'll watch the game tonight. They play the Dominican Republic. But to get to the gold medal game, just to round out this whole spiel here, but they have to beat the DR tonight, and then they would have to beat the loser of Japan, South Korea, who I believe also plays today. So then it would be in the gold medal game. But yeah, a lot of hurdles to jump through until they get to that point. All right, we will reconvene tomorrow with an update on that game, Team USA versus the Dominican Republic. Still a gold medal in play for the Americans. And of course, this Olympic update is brought to you by CarMax. If it's time to sell your car, go for sold with an instant offer from CarMax. Find out what your car is worth with an instant offer at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way it should be.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, Their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Kelly McDaniels is ESPN's Major League Baseball draft and prospect expert, which makes him like the Mel Kiper of baseball. Kelly, how do you feel about that?
I've had people noting that my hair has slowly been getting a little bit taller, and they're wondering if I'm trying to copy what he's doing. But if I get like halfway there, I'll be happy.
Very nice. At some point, by the way, I don't know if you had a chance to talk to Mel Kiper. A, he's an incredibly nice person, and B, man, that guy's a huge Orioles fan. Have you ever talked to him?
I haven't talked to him on one of my tours. I got to talk to McShay briefly, but I'm slowly, like, my first trip, I got to talk to Woj and McShay and Barry Melrose. And it's just sort of like, it's like the ESPN commercials. Like, eventually I'm sure I'll run into everybody and the Syracuse Orange men and all those other people. But yeah, Mel's definitely on my list.
Yeah. At some point, in fact, Taylor, we ought to have Mel on and you two can rant about the Orioles situation together.
Oh my
okay?
gosh. Yeah. That would be fun.
Awesome. About pumpkin pie filling.
All right. So before we get to what the Cubs and the Nationals got in trade return last week before the deadline, I want to ask you about the Kumar Rocker situation. Broad strokes, you know, he began the college baseball season considered he will be, you know, potentially a guy who's going to be chosen near the top of the draft, maybe even top of the draft. He goes through the season. He pitched successfully. I did have evaluators with teams noting that he wasn't throwing his fastball as much as he had in the past, which for them was a bit of a red flag. He didn't submit to a pre-draft MRI. He dropped to 10th in the draft when the Mets picked him. The conversation for the Mets organization was this was a no-brainer pick at the time that was made. He undergoes a physical, and the $6 million deal with the team disappears. And so the Mets now move on without him, and Kumar Rocker moves on without a team, without an organization. What was your take on the situation?
Yeah, there's like, I don't know, eight different interesting angles about how this went down. I agree with stuff that you've said over the last couple of days that this just kind of sucks for everybody. Like, this is a popular, talented player that now is not going to play in college or the pros this year, it sounds like. And that just sort of sucks. And the way the draft is set up, as you've mentioned as well, the way that this is essentially the same medical issue, not the same issue, but the same sort of process that happened with Brady Agin, where you don't know what the medical issue is. You find out what it is. You then can't come to terms because the medical issue was found after the draft. And MLB has had, what has it been, like 6 years since Brady Agin? And essentially nothing has, like, they've done different things. There's the MRI program you talked about existed after the Brady Agin situation to curtail this. I can tell you 4 years ago, over 50% of the pitchers invited to the program didn't submit for like six different reasons. Like, I almost had an article written, I think it was at Fangraphs at that time, about why the agents and players don't do this, because they basically nothing in it for them to do it. When you like actually break it down, like, what did they benefit from? So it's important to point that out when people think that it's like a red flag that Kumar wasn't in the MRI program. Like, almost nobody with a big time agent or that's a first 2-round pick does the MRI program, because there's not much to gain from it. And I would say another sort of interesting issue is that the Mets have, we're considering Gunnar Hoglund, who just had Tommy John surgery a couple months ago. They had Jacob DeGrom, who's had a TJ. They just traded for Carlos Carrasco. Last year, they drafted JT Gann, who had a TJ. Like, they're not scared of just a straight up TJ situation. And so sort of reading the tea leaves, you would assume that there is like a little more complexity here. But nobody, like, you know, formally knows what the complexity is. And I don't know, just the way the Steve Cohen tweets, the sort of messaging, the sort of huge surprise that on the last day, Jeff and I were finally able to sort of figure out that this wasn't going to happen. And also the sort of larger systemic issues with the process that it sort of points out. It's just sort of 100% a bummer across the board. Like, I don't see anybody with like a smile on their face as a result of this.
Yeah, I was getting texts yesterday from, you know, people around baseball and pushing back on some that I had written, and they some of what I'd written out and talked about. And, you know, some people were like, well, Scott Boras is a representative, made mistakes. I'm like, I'm not saying that, you know, along the way that mistakes weren't made or that the Mets necessarily did anything wrong. To me, if the Mets had, you know, medical information and it scared them away from doing the deal, you know what, that's their prerogative. But what I hate is that the whole thing is stacked so heavily against these 20, 21-year-olds. The fact that the Mets now, you know, they decide, look, we're not going to sign him. We're not even going to make him an official offer. We're going to move on. We're going to get a comp pick next year. We're going to get some, you know, slot money comp to us back as well. But the kid now has no place to go. Kamar Rocker has no place to go. That just sucks. I mean, it just stinks. And I really hope that the Players Association, which, you know, through the years, and it's not only the current regime, but, you know, Michael Wiener basically was, a party when he was head of the Player Association to designing the system. They've left the interest of these players behind. This seems like a place where they could do an easy fix. You know, Jeff talked on the trade Baseball Tonight the other day about trading draft picks. You know, the suggestion I had yesterday was that a player doesn't get a minimum offer of some kind from the team, and let's say it's 20% below slot, then you know what? That player should be able to become a free agent and go out for bidding. Because I think you and I would agree, no matter what the Mets found, I suspect that if you put Kamar Rocker out there for bidding, he would get some pretty serious interest from one of the other 29 teams or more than one team.
Yeah, I'm at a high school showcase right now, and there's a bunch of scouting directors here. And I pulled a couple of them yesterday. I said, if we make the 2022 draft right now, where does Kamar go? And they're like, like 20 or 30, maybe 40. Like, none of them having seen his medical. One team saw it. And of course, they're all, you know, suggesting the Washington Nationals are going to take him, which is probably the single most, you know, likely team to take him. But they're like, yeah, somebody between 20 and 50 will probably take him and give him like a slot bonus. Because at some point, when you look at like some of the teams that aren't quite as good in the draft, who they take in the second round, like, that guy basically makes no impact on the big league team anyway. And with Kamar, it's like the odds that he makes the big leagues and gives you, you know, 5 or 10 good starts or relief appearances, or, you know, however much you want to sort of adjust expectations given how the situation has played out. It's like, he's probably better than a lot of teams sort of average second round pick. And so you sort of start there, and then basically how many teams think that and how far does he have to move his way up? Obviously, we're like a year out from that. But yeah, I agree. I would imagine he gets $1 million, maybe a little bit more. That's sort of the expectation right now with nobody knowing anything. Maybe, you know, they share his entire medical with all 30 teams and this, you know, this whole situation plays out differently. But there were also there's like two other issues that are, I think, interesting about this. A, the Mets didn't take a backup plan, which I've had directors tell me when I don't need a backup plan, I'd take two of them just to be sure in case like all of my guys fail their physicals or whatever at the top. The Mets didn't take any. They had signed their other 19 picks. They'd spent all their money. They didn't spend, if you count the overage, over $1.3 million, which is, I don't know how to phrase it, but like, it basically doesn't happen because of this exact situation, which obviously doesn't happen that often, but you do it in case this happens. So that's a huge problem that no matter if, like, you know, Steve Cohen mandated the pick or whatever it was, anybody involved in the room could have pointed out on day three, hey, we got three picks left. We should probably just take some high school kid that wants $1 million, you know, just in case things don't work out. Right. And then the other thing is there was some skepticism. Like, I had Kamar rated lower than anybody else did on their boards. I think I had him rated 8th going into the draft. I wrote an article after like his third start, said like he was grunting a lot through the second and third inning. I had a tweet that got a lot of attention because his velocity went down like 3 ticks in the middle of the season. Like, there were also some suspicions. This wasn't like a completely, like, obviously what the Mets did and what it sounds like the Mets found is surprising. The fact that there was something going on there, you could see that looking on the mound that things weren't quite right. And so that also completely underlines the situation. Hey, get a backup plan. If it turns out you don't like what you see, you should be able to, you know, take somebody else and spend all your money, you know, with an owner like Steve Cohen that is, like, you know, very intent on getting the most out of his investment. And then, like you were saying, we can then change the rules next year so that everyone has to do an MRI before the draft so that there's no surprises. There's trading of picks, and then you hard slot all the picks so that everybody knows everything. Every pick is tied to an amount of money. Everybody can move up and down, and the guy just goes where he should go with, you know, a mostly efficient situation. And I, you know, as much as I'd like to have just like everyone gets an amount of money and they bid on a player and it's an auction, and that way everybody, you know, gets access to everybody, that'd be even better. But I think trading of picks and hard slotting and like pre-draft MRIs for everybody to get drafted, like, might be the best way to avoid the situation, even though right now the player's not taking the MRIs is because they have nothing to gain. Like, eventually you just have to make them do it if you want to avoid the situation. I don't see like a way around it.
You mentioned Steve Cohen's tweet. This is what he sent out on Sunday afternoon. Quote, education time. Baseball draft picks are worth up to 5 times their slot value to clubs. I never shy away from investments that can make me that type of return. Even people who were making the case to me yesterday that, you know, the Mets didn't do anything wrong. This is the way the system is. You know, but Scott Boras screwed this up. Everybody on both sides cringed at this tweet that I spoke with, because it completely underscored the fact that we all know that the draft eligible players get absolutely screwed by the slot system in terms of what their actual value is. And on top of that, while he didn't mention Rocker's specific medical information, underneath it, he's implying that this is a medical disaster, whatever it is. And again, I don't know what was in the MRI. I don't have any specific information, but for the guy who owns the team to send this out, it's basically sending a message that, yep, it was so bad that I wouldn't even do this type of investment. That's just wrong. And I do think that he should be fined for it.
Yeah, if there's one thing you learn being on sort of baseball Twitter, it's you're going to get negative attention every time you equate a person to an asset value and people as widgets and like how to move the pieces around the chessboard to get what you want. And rightfully so, because I think when I was starting out in baseball, when like Moneyball had just been written, like doing that was somewhat novel because some people didn't understand like sort of the values involved and some of the, you know, the NBA style calculations you can make to like make a fairer trade. It was sort of novel and helpful. And then somewhere around like, you know, 6 or 8 years into that process, it was like, starting to feel not great about this now. Cause then there's like a logical extreme of just treating people like objects, as opposed to like doing a better job with like the stewardship of the company you're in charge of. And I think that now is like, we're, you know, 2 decades past the time when it started feeling cringy to publicly do that. And obviously like Kevin Mather was maybe a little more forthcoming in a negative way and the way that he talked about his players as assets. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it is a secret looking at how teams draft from my perspective or, you know, more the trade market and more in your area, that this is how teams think about players. And they are increasingly bringing in more executives that think like this, and owners see the bottom line and that you typically end up saving money when you have this approach, you know, lower cost, you know, higher, you know, ROI, however you want to measure it when you take this approach. And so I think both ownership and management are feeling better about this approach. Because of, you know, wait 2 weeks and call up Chris Bryant, you get an extra year of control, like offer an extension, every guy in AA that didn't get a big bonus. Like there's a lot of manifestations of this thought process. And I feel a little bit guilty that I was like pushing this when I was working for an office, you know, 15 years ago as like an intern, because it was the right thing for me to do in my position in a front office at that point. And then, you know, along the way, it's like, oh boy, this thing is, it's not because of me that it's become widespread, but like, it's really like run away to where it's, you know, it's where corporate America has been for 300 years, where it's just sort of like, you know, mistreating your employees, whether they're players or, you know, whether they're scouts or whoever it is. And then the guys at the top get more money. And it's like, yeah, it's come for baseball now. Like that's been true for at least 5 years now that point of view has been proliferating.
Yeah. And hopefully when, you know, Major League Baseball Player Association talk about the next CBA, they can talk about players like Kumar Rocker, not as, you know, assets who should have, you know, educated their agents on whether or not they should take an MRI, and they should just think of them as being young people who don't have experience in this industry and should not be exploited. All right. So last Friday on our trade deadline show, you were asked the question about, you know, the Cubs and their return on this mass sell-off they have of some of the legacy players from 2016. As you gather more information since then, what's your general takeaway on how the Cubs did?
I think they did a little bit better than I would have guessed. If you just would have told me, these are all the players they're going to trade, tell me what you think they're going to get, I would have guessed a little bit worse than this, just because looking at the last couple of deadlines, teams have been very hesitant to pay sort of traditional retail prices. Teams didn't seem inclined to go for it. Again, going back to this whole point of view where teams aren't trying to win any specific year. They're trying to like increase their odds to win over the next 5 years. And so, you know, paying a high price for a rental seems like a little harder. And then this year, the price went back up to like, you know, maybe not traditional retail prices, but pretty close, like the Barrios trade, the Gallo trade, like where you're getting a year and a half of control. I think that's like pretty close to like a fair price on both sides and, you know, didn't have to wait until the last second of the deadline with like a standoff. So I would say that, you know, obviously it's hard for me to say that like Cubs fans should feel great about this because like obviously this is not the sort of thing they want to hear about when that huge group that maybe should have done better over this period than just one World Series gets broken up. But all things considered, between this and the Darvish trade and some other minor deals, like I think they've done a pretty good job of building back up the farm system if you sort of grant them that this is what they have to do, which I'm not sure it's what they have to do, but it's what they're doing.
The Nationals, you know, 3 weeks before the deadline, there wasn't any thought they were going to be sellers, but they wind up dealing Max Scherzer, Trey Turner, and others. What'd you think about what the Nationals did?
Yeah, they're in a weird spot because they're like perennially in the bottom five in the farm rankings because they're always trading their mid-tier prospects to prop up the team and always take the biggest high upside shots in the draft they can. So sometimes they get a couple really good guys who within 2 years are in the big leagues. Which you can, you know, every good player on their team right now basically has been drafted and developed or signed like Juan Soto out of the international market. So they typically have two or three really good prospects, not a very good system. And then the really good prospects are graduating very quickly. And so now they're in sort of, you know, to use a term you hear from a lot of office people, asset accumulation mode. Like we need to turn now assets into future assets. We need to trade, you know, now good players making a lot of money on short-term contracts into prospects. And they haven't really done that in a while. As you might know the history better than me, but it's like, it doesn't seem like they've done this in a long time. And the Scherzer Turner trade, I think, was good. It was at that level where it was like, you got about what you were supposed to get. If they could have gotten Barrios level returns, then that would have been a home run. But I think they hit a solid, you know, double or triple and got two players that are close to the big leagues that can help them. Cause I don't think they're going to do like a 3 year reset thing. I think they're going to continue trying to compete. So getting top 100 prospects in double A, triple A, I guess now, Gray in the big leagues, like that sort of fits what they're trying to do.
And before you go, I want to ask you about the state of the Padres farm system, which is a really interesting topic of conversation among executives of other teams over the weekend, because 2 years ago, I think the Padres, even 18 months ago, Padres are generally considered to have the best farm system in baseball among, you know, a lot of other teams, but they've made a ton of trades for major league assets, flipping minor leaguers for major leaguers, Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, you know, this summer, Adam Frazier. And the perception of folks I talked to over the weekend was Padres farm system is basically strip mined. And from what I understand in their talks with the Rangers and other teams, they had got to the point where they were like, okay, we're not trading CJ Abrams, but we'll talk about anybody else. And in the eyes of some of the people I talked to, they don't have a lot of attractive assets left at this point. And they also feel like that the Padres now are in this very specific window because of all the prospects they traded, where you've got 1 year left with Musgrove, you've got 2 years left with Darvish and Snell. Like it's go time for the Padres because of where their farm system is now and you know, where their major league team is. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the challenge of doing a, you know, what I sort of contend teams should be doing more often and what I think, like, you know, baseball fans in general are excited about, which is a team just saying, hey, let's go for it. We don't need to like save all our prospects. We're just trying to win in these next 3 years. Let's move all our chips in the middle for these next 3 years. And they're doing it. The problem is it's 3 years. And then after that, it's like, oh boy, let's see what we got. But yeah, the sort of conversation around their farm system was they built up their farm system into, if you were to take, you know, Wander Franco out of the equation, it was like them basically tied with the Rays for the best farm system in baseball for, you know, multiple years in a row. And then they basically said, as you described, like, oh, here's our top, you know, six guys. And they end up trading Luis Patino out of that group. But say five of our top six guys, You can't touch them. We'll touch all the other guys down here. And then they traded, like, as you said, like basically all of them. Like there's a couple guys like recent, like last 2 to 3 year draft picks that they haven't traded a couple of them. I think the Darvish deal where they traded four like upside position players was like, that was like the haul that they could have made a trade with anybody with. Those are the kind of players everybody's looking for right now. And the Padres, I mean, if you look at some of the results of the most recent drafts in July 2 classes, they're better than everybody else at like picking those guys out. And again, going back to the sort of callous math, like their ROI in those markets has been better than other teams. The way that works is that they typically are moving money around in the draft. They're getting Cole Wilcox, a first round pick in the third round. They're then going under in the second. They're getting a guy like Josh Mears, that's now a real prospect, like in the international class. Like the guy they get for multiple millions of dollars tends to be better than most other teams' examples. Like the scouting and development has worked. And then to prop up the big league team, they traded all those guys. And now if they wanted to make like a Blake Snell level deal or a Darvish level deal and get three or four high upside teenage prospects that are highly regarded that every team wants, I'm not sure they have four or five left. I think they have one or two, and then they'd either have to trade a big leaguer that's getting pushed off the roster, trade four lower level guys and not get a Darvish level return, or dip into those five or six guys they didn't want to move, which now is down to four guys that still have prospect eligibility. So yeah, they've moved their chips in, and I guess the problem is the Giants are better than they thought and the Dodgers are still really good and improving. And so they don't have a lot of bullets left in the chamber and they might need to shoot a couple more times.
All right, Kylie, thanks for doing this. I know you're headed to watch some players today. Enjoy that.
Yeah, thanks. I'll probably come back with a Sunday.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. Sarah, I saw you tweeting last night about a cat that was running around the field at Yankee Stadium. I kind of had the same sentiment you did. I guess having grown up with a lot of farm animals, I just looked at the cat's eyes and I just felt sorry for it because it seemed like a younger type cat. Like, I'm guessing that cat probably about, it was a very healthy cat, but like 10 to 12 months old or so. And you could just see in its wide eyes how frightened it was.
It looked so scared. And I did not grow up with farm animals, and I was still stressed out for this cat. I mean, all of the fans were cheering, and I know it's really fun to be in the stands and something wild and unexpected happens. And they were chanting MVP, and it was kind of funny. But I was just watching this cat trying so hard to evade the security guards, like 10 security guards out there to try to trap it. And I just felt so badly for it. So I really hope that cat is okay. I'm glad people got their fun video out of it, but I was worried for the cat.
I suspect the cat is probably last night after the fans cleared out of Yankee Stadium, probably was going through having a nice meal, maybe some leftovers, things were left by fans, and then, you know, maybe some rats that it caught, because it looked like an absolutely healthy cat.
So, it really did. You know,
and I'd say this, if you were a Yankee fan, it was the most exciting thing that happened during the game, which was a complete letdown for the Yankees and sort of in keeping with the rhythm of their season, because it always feels like when the Yankees start to get some traction, they fall down. You know, they have this great weekend series after the Rizzo and Gallo trades. They sweep the Marlins. They go into Yankee Stadium on Monday. I don't know if you watched any of the pregame show, but there was a lot of energy because Rizzo was going to play his first game in Yankee Stadium, Gallo's first game in Yankee Stadium. They're playing the Orioles, a team they should absolutely dominate. Sorry, Taylor. You know, where anything less than a sweep is going to feel like a loss. Andrew Heaney goes out and he gets blasted. Like, he repeated. It felt like he was throwing the same pitch over and over and over again, being hit for home runs. They lose 7-1. And then after the game, Aaron Boone makes the announcement that Gerrit Cole is out with COVID. So that just feels like the way the Yankees season is gone.
Definitely. You know, I keep waiting for the Yankees to have back-to-back series sweeps. They did it in the middle to end of May, May 18th to May 23rd. They swept the Rangers and then the White Sox. That was one not great team and then one really good team in the White Sox. And they haven't done that since. And it's the only time all year they've won, I think, 6 or 7 games in a row that weren't back-to-back sweeps at another point. But you just keep waiting for, or I could just keep waiting for that as a sign that they are totally rolling. And I think your assessment is 100% right that they just can't get the momentum. And obviously we hope Gerrit Cole is okay. And, you know, this is certainly a growing problem in this country, the way this has gone, whether people are vaccinated or not. But, you know, if we can take one step back from something that is a health issue, it did have that feeling of here the Yankees go again. And it just does seem like that continues to happen. And you mentioned Andrew Heaney. I mean, we talked about the Yankees on our post-trade deadline show on Friday afternoon, and definitely the acquisitions of Rizzo and especially, and also of Gallo were going to help them. But I was wondering if they needed a better pitcher, and they haven't really made that trade deadline move for a pitcher that then worked out in a while, it feels like. And Andrew Heaney became the first pitcher in Yankees history to allow 4 home runs in his team debut. And I'm not sure that the expectations for him, at least outside myself, looking at his stats page, were really that high anyway. So it really feels like there's momentum, which is not quantifiable, but that is a big part of the issue here. It just doesn't all come together at one point.
Early in the year when the Giants got off to the great start, maybe your mom was the only one who would think they were going to keep going, okay? It felt like, you know, early on, this team, which weren't high expectations for, at some point they'd come back down to earth. Sarah, they are now seemingly in a command position in the National League West, a 3.5 game lead over the Dodgers, a 7 game lead over the San Diego Padres. Only 2 teams in baseball have a better run differential than the Giants, that being the Houston Astros and the Los Angeles Dodgers. It is amazing how they just seem to keep rolling along, and they just seem to, they're going to be a dangerous team in October. What do you think?
It really seems like it. I mean, even a game last night, they're playing the Diamondbacks. They should win the game. They probably should not have blown a 6-run lead to the Diamondbacks, but they come out in extra innings. They get it done. We've talked a lot about how, especially when you're the road team, scoring those multiple runs in these new extra innings is kind of the key. They scored 3 runs in the top of the 10th and they won the game. So again, that's not the best opponent, but the fact that they got that done after blowing a 6-run lead to the Diamondbacks, which sounds a little bit deflating, just shows a lot about this team. And they've been so good. I mean, they have one of the best defenses in baseball. It's pretty much them and the Rays. And you start to think about the teams that I think Farhan Zaidi has modeled this team after, and you think of the Dodgers, who you mentioned, and I think you also think of the Rays just in terms of player selection and the way that they construct the team. So I think it's very interesting that those are your two best defensive teams in the majors, them and the Rays. But I still want to see how the Dodgers are when Trey Turner is back off the COVID injured list and Mookie Betts is fully back. I mean, he looked pretty good with that somersaulting catch and play that he made on Sunday. So if he's going to be playing second base and he's going to be healthy, I do think the Dodgers still have a run in them that they could end up the division champs. But I do think that the difference between the Giants and Dodgers and the Padres has become very, very significant. And the Giants are certainly going to be a tough team to contend with in October. They hit home runs, they pitch really well, and they play really good defense. That's a really, really good recipe.
I know you well enough to know that you can easily separate your emotions about your favorite team from your analysis, but there's a part of you that will always be at the heart of you, a Mets fan. They are in first place in the National League East. The Philadelphia Phillies, 2.5 games behind the Braves 3.5 games behind. Even the Nationals are kind of on the fringe. They're 6 games behind. Which of those teams scare you the most?
I think it has to be the Phillies, and not just because they're the closest, but I just, they have seemed to have the most momentum lately. I mean, they just did a game where they scored 15 runs. I know they're playing the Pirates, and I guess part of this is also that I've been waiting on the Braves all year, and all that's happened is Acuna got hurt, and they've also had pitching injuries, everything else. I really liked what they did, the deadline, adding especially Jorge Soler, but all of the different outfielders that they added. But I don't know. It just feels like the Phillies have been the team that's been closest there for so long that it just seems like it could end up being them. I think the Kyle Gibson acquisition was a good one. They need a pitcher. I don't think I'm as high on him as some of the evaluation that was saying he was the second best pitcher available on the market, whatever else. But if you look at his expected stats, everything else, he's still going to be good for them. And what he did in his team debut, you know, 6 2/3 innings, 2 runs, I think that that's about what you would expect out of him. If they're going to have another pitcher going out and doing something like that, in addition to Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler, then I think they can be good. Obviously, the end of games is always the question there. But I don't know. The Braves just haven't been able to get it going the way I expected them to, even when Acuna was healthy.
Well, they are going to be getting a Noah back, and they will be getting Travis d'Arnaud back, right? And that's certainly going to help them, and they have the experience of recent seasons. And it feels like the longer that the Phillies and the Braves are kind of hanging in there, the more their confidence will grow. If you compare it to like an NCAA tournament game when a number 3 seed is playing a 14 seed, if the 14 seed is kind of hanging in there and you got like 8 minutes to go, then they're going to feel like, you know what, we actually do have a shot to win this thing. And the one thing I'd say, I would be more afraid of the Braves than I would the Phillies, but when the Phillies get their rotation all in order, that's the best rotation in the division now that the Mets don't have DeGrom. That would be a little scary if I'm a Mets fan to run into a 3-4 game series against the Phillies with a group that they could run out. If you are a Padres fan, and it looks like they're, have a sturdy lead in the wild card race, which teams behind them in the wild card race would scare you the most?
See, that's a really good question because, I mean, just as the Braves and Phillies are obviously flawed, I mean, your next two teams in the wild card race are the Reds and the Cardinals, both of whom have significant bullpen issues. But and then you get to the Phillies, who I think if they're going to make the playoffs, and then the Braves are more likely to win the division than end up a wild card. But I guess I would have to go with the Reds only because that offense can be so explosive. I mean, we know the pitching problems. I'm not ignoring that whatsoever. But they do have the ability to come out and win like 15-14 or something like that. And they've already had a couple games this year, especially at home, where they've had scores kind of like that. So I think it would have to be them. But I agree with, what you said at the beginning, that it's probably going to be the Padres, even with the struggles they've had and the injuries. We don't know the full extent with Fernando Tatis Jr. yet. I still think it probably ends up the Padres. They do seem demonstrably better than those two teams, but I think that Reds offense is probably the pick.
We got about a minute left. I want to ask you about the Cubs and what they did last week. I, wrote a column yesterday in which I compared the group of Cubs players to 6-year college seniors. And I, being a 6-year college senior myself, I knew when I was 24 years old at Vanderbilt and I was in a class with 19 and 18 year olds. Yeah, it was time for me to move on. And I feel that way about Rizzo and Brian and Baez. Like, I think they'll benefit from moving on and going, change of scenery, because it really did feel when you were around that team at times like they were absolutely dead. And they needed a different challenge in a different place. You went to college in Chicago. I don't think it took you 6 years to go through the University of Chicago. But tell me how you if you agree with me, disagree.
I totally agree. I mean, players are always excited about trades and excited to be with the new team. They know what to say, but it did really seem like there was a weight off each of their shoulders when we saw each of them talking to their respective media members for the first time, you know, Rizzo and with the Yankees and Baez with the Mets media and Chris Bryant with the Giants. And, you know, this has been a topic of conversation now for at least the last 2 years. And I really think that there was a, you know, weight off their shoulders with the finality of it. Okay, this has happened. You know, we all saw that video of Chris Bryant crying. I mean, I read those tears as, oh my gosh, this finally happened. I have been hearing people talk about this for so long. And, you know, he was just so excited to be there in San Francisco. And the fact that they all homered, I mean, I think the fact that they all homered is a little bit just luck of the draw. I don't think we should read too much into it, but it does show you that these guys are in these new places and ready to lock in. And I also think that each of them in their different ways, very different personalities, will be guys who will be really motivated by playing for these teams down the stretch and playing for teams that are in playoff contention. I mean, Rizzo is the one who has the highest mountain to climb, of course, because they're not currently in postseason contention, but I think each of them will really feed off of that. And I think I was just glad for them. I mean, I'm not trying to upset Cubs fans. I know Cubs fans have made their upsetness very well known, especially on social media over the last few days. But I think it really was time for a change. So I really agree with what you wrote in that column.
Just doubling back real quick, a piece of information about the Braves. I texted someone and I got back a response. And Noah is still likely to get one or two rehab starts away from being an option. He threw 50 pitches last time out, so they'll probably get him up to 65 pitches next time out, then 80 pitches, and then the Braves' rotation will be really interesting. I think that that's going to be a fun division race to watch down the stretch. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have Tracy Winchell at Tracy Places. Tracy writes in, "Hey, Buster, how do teams transition traded players with regard to rehab and treatment programs?" She references Baez. Do the Cubs share his treatment program, heal with the Mets? She's basically asking players traded while in the IL, how does it work?
Yeah, Tracy, it's pretty much an open conversation between the medical staffs of the two teams. You know, they'll share the medical information. If there's specific conversations that have to take place about the rehab, then athletic trainer will speak to athletic trainer. That's why, you know, a few years ago, AJ Preller of the Padres got in trouble because the Padres had two separate caches of medical information. They had medical information that was available to other teams when they had trade talks, and then there was the real medical information that was held behind the scenes. And he wound up getting suspended a month for that by Major League Baseball. So, yeah, but the teams are pretty open when they have trade conversations about the medical information.
Let's go to David Precht at David Precht. David writes in, "No cow talk with Nelson Cruz. Is he a Jersey? But you did talk cows with him, just not his cow preference," which I liked, which was a great little nugget from your interview yesterday.
Yeah, first off, he is absolutely a Jersey. He's super smart. Jerseys are really smart. Holsteins are really stupid. Okay. I can tell you flat out about that. I got the sense, the reason why I didn't go down the road of, okay, what type of cows did you have? Did you have shorthorns? Did you have Herefords? Did you have Jerseys? Did you have Holsteins? I got the sense that all that happened when he was little. Mm. And I think he might have given me a blank stare. Maybe not. You know, the next time I see Nelson, I'll ask him, you know, did you have Jerseys? But my sense was they had beef. So maybe it was Angus or Hereford.
Got it. All right. There's your cow talk for the day. Thanks for writing in, everyone. # Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, Kylie, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft.
begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.